April 14th, 2017. This is episode 61 of the PHP Roundtable. Today is all about dependency injection and PSR 11. I'm your host, Sammy K. Powers. So dependency injection, right? Putting objects inside of other objects. That's the official technical definition of dependency injection. Just kidding. I just made that up. It's a little bit more complicated than that, but you get the gist of it that way. It seems like the PHP community has really embraced this idea of dependency injection, like more fully than other programming languages. And in fact, there was a podcast recently where it was a C++ podcast, CPP podcast I was listening to, and they brought up the topic of dependency injection. They're like, have you heard about this thing, dependency injection? And the other guy was like, no, I haven't heard of this. And it's like this, it was like this foreign concept to them. And I'm like, what? I've been using dependency injection for like ever as a PHP programmer, and I can't imagine even doing PHP without dependency injection anymore. So we're going to be talking about it. There is a lot of things going on with dependency injection in the PHP community, including an official PHP fig standard that we're going to be discussing later called PSR 11, which is all about standardizing dependency injection containers. So today we talk DI, dependency injection. Now that we know what we're talking about, let's meet our panel, and as always, in no particular order, Stefan Hochdorfer. I worked really hard on that last name. He's a software developer, conference speaker, entrepreneur for 13 years. He was a group leader of two groups. Whew, I can just do one, and that's insane. Author of Disco DI Container. Welcome, Stefan.
Hello, hello, hello.
Hello, hello, hello. We also have David Stockton. He's the PHP developer since 1997. Whoa, 1979, that would have been before PHP. The PHP developer. I didn't write the PHP developer, but I said the PHP developer, but I think of you as the PHP developer since 1997, David. Conference speaker and quote-unquote all the rest. That's his official intro. Welcome, David.
Welcome. Thank you.
Also, another David, so I'm going to have to say David S. and David N., because we also have David Nigiri. Nigiri?
Hi, guys.
Nigiri?
Nigiri.
Nigiri. Oh, man. We're going to say David N. from now on, just to distinguish you from David Stockton. But David N. is a PHP developer for 12 years and the CTO of The Coding Machine, which is a really cool name for a company, author of the MOOF DI framework, and the main editor for PSR 11, which we're going to be talking about later. Welcome, David.
Hi, guys.
Hi. And finally, we have Matthias Nobuck, and he runs his own company called Nobuck's Office, another cool, clever title for a company. He's the author of books and blogs, and he's a regular speaker and runs workshops. Welcome, Matthias.
Thank you very much.
So this is a great panel. We got a lot of people here. And we're going to be talking about this thing that we've been using maybe for a long time, or maybe we're totally new to it. So for those who aren't familiar with dependency injection, maybe they don't, in their framework of choice, they don't use dependency injection, or maybe they're new to PHP, or maybe they've done it for a long time and never taken advantage of dependency injection. Can we get like a higher up, like no like intimate details of like implementation, but just sort of like higher up, what does DI give us?
DI gives us it gives us a lot of power. It gives us a lot of flexibility in our code. You know, you were talking about the C++ podcast and how this was new to them. I know when I started out with O, it was all about creating the objects that you need inside of the objects that you're building, which is, as we've now learned, is not the best idea ever. So DI gives you testability. It gives you flexibility. It gives you the ability to do things that you probably didn't think were possible if you are hard-coding, building objects inside of other objects. So DI is pretty cool.
Yeah, in addition to that, I guess if you use DI correctly, you avoid tight coupling, which is like really the bad thing that you really want to avoid when working in a large code base. It also allows you to reuse existing components and just stack together in a different way, just by like changing a bit of configuration code and not like hacking things together in a weird way in code. So making all your application infrastructure and all the different libraries work together quite seamlessly, I guess that's the main key point of selling DI.
When you look up dependency injection online, you'll often run into a keyword, inversion of control, which sounds kind of confusing and weird. What does anybody want to dive into how DI plays into what inversion of control is?
What you'll have is if you hard code every dependency that you need in any of your objects, so that's hard coding at the class level, then you will end up with a fixed dependency structure. And the object that is creating the object, it needs to fulfill its job, is going to be in full control of all those dependencies, including their particular configuration details. With inversion of control, and that's like dependency injection is one type of inversion of control, you invert the control. You give up control as an object about the particular dependencies that you're going to need, the way they are configured, and sometimes even the exact types of them, so the classes that are used to instantiate them.
Very cool. I think I have some specific questions that have to deal with this concept a little bit later, but before we get to that, I'm kind of diving into maybe some more implementation aspects of DI. How would you typically implement DI on just a standard PHP project?
The first thing is really, as Matthias said, that you don't want your objects to instantiate, to have the control over the instantiation of the dependency. So the first step is really to put the dependencies, to inject the dependencies in the constructor. So rather than making, if you need a logger, rather than writing a new logger in your application, you pass the logger as a parameter of the constructor. This is really what dependency injection is about. So it means that you do not write the new keyword in your object code, and that it will be written outside of it. So basically you push instantiation outside of your object, and well, the instantiation has to happen somewhere actually. So you're putting this away from your object into some spaghetti code somewhere. And this is where dependency injection containers come to help. It helps you solve the problem of having all those new objects created cleanly and not having a huge file with a lot of new and a lot of wiring going on. And in that respect, dependency injection containers are solving the wiring problem of your object together.
So I guess it's sort of like when they talk about playing guitar or any kind of instrument, it's not about the notes, but it's what's between the notes. In this case, dependency injection is what's between the objects, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, true. I mean, it connects also to separation of concerns. Like the objects themselves should not know how their dependencies should be constructed together. They just should say, hey, I just need something that implements this particular interface or this particular type. And the DI container will make sure that the correct instance gets passed to it. And that's why it makes the objects testable, because you don't depend on a certain implementation. You just say, okay, I need type X to make my logic work, right? So that's the basic idea.
So there's a couple ways, I guess, we can inject dependencies into our objects. One way that seems to be most hardened, I guess, I don't know, would be the constructor injection, where you're kind of injecting it through the constructor when this object is instantiated. Another way is the setter injection, where you have a method on the object that allows you to set the service or whatever. So what is the context in which you would use like a constructor setter versus just like a setter method?
So for me, the constructor injection, this is when I'm the object I'm building has to have this other dependent object in order to function correctly. So my goal at the point when I've run a new whatever, wherever that may happen, is that I've got a fully working object. In order to guarantee that I've got a fully working object, constructor injection is the way to go. If I do setter injection, it means that after I've built my object, I still have to do some things in order to make it work properly, which is less than ideal, I guess.
Yeah, most definitely less than ideal, I would say. you know, when you have some extra dependencies that may or may not have been set before you would like to use them, that will give you really messy code. You have to check if the dependency has been provided. Usually this is done by some null check or something. But then, well, you either need it or you don't need it. There's no such a thing as an optional dependency. There are many different solutions for solving it. I've seen many cases where a logger has been optional, for example. In such a case, you could easily inject a logger that doesn't really do anything if logging is not what you need. Or you could try to move the logging functionality out of the original class. that would be a perfectly viable solution.
So is the setter injection method less than ideal simply because we're dealing with mutability now? Because if we're trying to make all of our objects to be as, or I guess certain types of objects to be immutable, aka read-only or not changing the state so much on those objects, is that kind of the key thing that we're looking for with dependency injection, is to kind of keep things immutable?
Yeah, I think the best approach to dependency injection, but also dependency injection containers, would be to have only stateless services that will just be able to perform some sort of task. Not meaning they can't have side effects or something. They should definitely make some change to the world or in some way, but their own state shouldn't change in any way. But we may not be used to this very much as PHP developers, where we get a request and we handle it, we return a response, and then everything gets thrown away. We just get a clean slate to start handling the next request. So it's a different mindset.
But that being said, using setter injection or constructor injection is not directly related to the mutability versus immutability concerns. You can inject mutable services in a setter or in a constructor and it doesn't change anything. You use setter injection if your services are optional, and many people will think that there is no such thing as an optional service. An optional service, sorry. Any requested services should be compulsory. And I think that's what Matthias meant just 2 minutes ago. And of course, services should be immutable, but that's a completely different topic.
Yeah, it is. It's one that we've kind of tried to address on the PHP Roundtable a couple times, talking about immutability and in the context of functional programming, and then just in the context of how immutability can make things better for you. And every time I make something mutable, it makes me feel gross inside. And I'm like, I must be doing something wrong. But there's, I guess, very good reasons for making things mutable. And I guess the reason why I'm trying to bring it up is because when you're first getting started in dependency injection, it seems like you're so afraid of the new keyword, right? We don't want to new up objects anywhere in our code. But there aren't not necessarily, we don't have to say that we can't ever use the new keyword, right? Like, can you give us a couple examples where we might want to continually use the new keyword within the context of maybe even lower level code?
I guess that's a real problem of dependency injection currently in the mindset of a lot of PHP developers, because they think we have to configure everything through this DI container, and that's not true. Things like domain objects, you can instantiate in your code without any problem at all, or maybe helper classes. But when it comes to like services or repositories that you want to exchange or where you want to use a different implementation in your testing framework or in your testing environment, then dependency injection makes totally sense. So you need to be aware of like what you're doing, what you want to achieve, as always, and then like pick the right method. So new is definitely not bad and not evil. Just make sure you don't use it too much. that's probably a good explanation, I guess.
It seems to be the case with pretty much anything, right? Like,
yeah,
once you get like a new idea or a new framework or a new coding style or whatever, or new architecture, you're like, oh, let's do this to all the things. And then suddenly everything is to the point to where it's actually worse than when we started, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember the time when I discovered the strategy pattern and like I put it like everywhere, even mm-hmm. where I did not apply. So yeah, you need to really be careful using these kinds of
things. There is an interesting parallel there where the new keyword is, according to Stefan, used in the domain part of your application. That I agree with that, mainly, usually. The longer I'm writing code, the more I feel that like mutation should be limited to a really small part of the application. And this is, in fact, the same part where also all the new keywords are, the domain part, where you instantiate things, not letting them be injected in some way, or maybe based on some interface or something. You're creating them exactly as you want them, but you also modify them exactly as you need them to be modified, and not in some way that is unpredictable or that should be debugged. So that's an interesting parallel, maybe.
Absolutely. Well, you mentioned something about interfaces. We actually haven't even said something about interfaces yet. What is interfaces? So if you're new to PHP, there is this concept of interfaces, which is basically like this. We call them contracts, I guess you could call it. And it's basically a way of kind of outlining what a class should have, but it doesn't actually have any implementations of the class. So it's like basically just like you'll have like, oh, I need a function, and it's going to be named this, and it returns this, or it takes these parameters, whatever. What role do those play in dependency injection?
I think interfaces help decouple what your dependency is from the actual implementation. So in theory, as long as your class that you're injecting conforms to the interface, you should be able to replace it with another instance or another type of class that also conforms to that interface. I say in theory because that's not always true. The interface doesn't capture necessarily all of the behavior that we may want to imply with an interface, I suppose. It doesn't capture things like throwing exceptions, unless you're on newer versions of PHP 7 or 7.1. It may not capture the return type, so you're relying on things like doc block comments and things like that. But I think it's a powerful way to be able to extend your application, give it new functionality. Like Stefan said, the strategy pattern allows you to inject new functionality inside of another class, right? If you know what the interface is going to be, if you know what methods are going to be on that class or on that object you're injecting, you can make the containing class do all sorts of things that you may not have originally thought possible.
Very cool. Actually, you mentioned type hints and things. I upgraded to PHP 7, I do so less. I don't even know how to say this. I don't use doc blocks nearly as much as I used to, because I like to type in like all the scalar values at pretty much every level I can. Maybe a little bit overkill, but you know,
strict type for the win.
Yeah, absolutely. Although it's really nice when you want that duck typing in that one use case. It's like, oh, it's so nice to kind of be able to fall back on that. That's the beauty of it. Wes Netmo on Twitter chimed in quite a few minutes ago, and when we were talking about how PHP nerds nerd out on dependency injection, and he said, other languages devs are obsessed with encapsulation as a cool security measure. We don't. We are cool. So maybe we should be looking into some of these other things that these other programming languages are nerding out about. In fact, I was talking with a C# programmer not too long ago, and he was what was he talking about? Oh, he was like nerding out on, like, he was talking about something just like we talk about dependency injections, just sort of like being like taken for granted, or like is that right? Taken for granted. Like, we just take for granted that we use dependency injection pretty much in modern PHP, which is kind of interesting. But kind of talking about specific implementations, if I am injecting like say 5 or more objects into my constructor, is that a code smell that I'm doing something wrong?
Yes.
All right, check it. Check mark. Moving on.
Good or no?
Okay, what, we have some disagreement. Why are we not on the same page?
Well, in my mind, if you inject like more than 5 or 6 dependencies, your class probably does too much, and then you should restructure your application to make sure that your objects really focus on one specific thing, so to speak. Sure, there are edge cases where you probably need to inject like 10 dependencies, but you should really try to avoid that. So I really tend to keep the dependencies of my classes between 2 and 5 in a regular way. Was that politically correct?
Or? Absolutely. I mostly agree with you. Truly, I just say it really depends on what you inject in your classes. In most frameworks, we are used to injecting services and services only. I've seen some use cases, especially with the framework I'm developing, Move, where I'm injecting more than services. For example, I could be injecting a form object with fields in the form. I can do this because I have some drag and drop tools with a nice UI to do the wiring. So I have way more entries in my containers than in most containers. And in those cases, I can end up with maybe a bit more objects injected in the container. Sometimes with more objects injected in the constructor, but you should definitely tend to try to keep them as low as possible, indeed.
So I want to talk on one last thing of kind of implementation detail before we move on to maybe talking about some tools and then PSR 11. So dependency injection with concurrency. If we're thinking about taking advantage of some maybe like generators or trying to add some coroutine stuff to our PHP project, and everything is not necessarily being executed in order, and we maybe get to a situation where we have a dependency that hasn't quite been resolved yet, and we need it. What do we do? Has anybody even ran into that scenario? I haven't personally ran into it, but it was just sort of like in the back of my head. I was just coming up with show notes. I was like, in this particular situation, I can see that this might happen.
If you're running with generator and you're doing asynchronous PHP, it's really not an issue because you have long living threads. So I'd rather say that the performance of the container does not is not important anymore. What is important is having immutable services, because your services are going to be used several times for several different requests. But if everything is immutable, you're perfectly fine to go. And then your services will be only instantiated once by the container. So once the service is here, the container does not have to instantiate it anymore. So even performance-wise, it's really cool. Does it make any sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah, I feel that things that are not resolved yet, or we are still waiting for a result, those are always related to I/O, getting some file or getting some response from a network call. So when it comes to things that come from your dependency injection container, then that shouldn't be the problem.
Well, speaking of dependency injection container, that is one of the tooling things that we could use in order to help us implement dependency injection in our project, I suppose. So Composer, great. We got to this thing called packages. We can just install things. What are a couple of our options when it comes to dependency injection? I know some of you guys are actually authors of some of these projects, but what kind of options do we have here? Everyone goes silent.
I guess there are really two different kinds of containers. The one that runs purely in PHP, like Pimple, like Disco, and the one that take a configuration file as an entry and that match this configuration file to build dependencies. Originally, the first dependency injection containers were using configuration files, maybe mostly because they come from the Java world, where the Spring framework started this with this awful XML configuration file that you have to write.
Yeah. It's awful.
And I'd say that around 2009, maybe, we started importing that in PHP. And the first implementation were kind of really on the model of the Spring framework. Like if you look at the Symfony container, it's some really heavy machinery that is parsing XML YAML files and building a PHP class. So this is a compiled container. You start with a configuration file and you generate PHP file. And at the other end of the spectrum, you have containers that are doing this purely in PHP, like Pimple, like Disco, like a lot of others, and that are trying to avoid as much as possible the configuration part. You deal with factories that are building your object, so it's pure PHP, you can debug it directly, so that's pretty cool also. And it's really another take on the problem, but at the end, they solve the same problem. They give you services that are wired together, and that's what's important.
Well, I guess we also have a third part or a third option, which are containers that use a lot of annotations. So you need a lot of parsing upfront and building cache files to make sure that in production it will work fast as possible. So I guess these are the three main options that we have these days.
Oh, and we can add auto-wiring containers, but maybe we will talk about those one a bit later.
And what was that last part?
Auto wiring container.
Oh, so like using reflection and things like that.
Exactly.
Okay, so it's interesting that we didn't include that in the list of containers, right? It's like, oh, we have these three, and then we left off the reflection one. I'm curious why we did that. I don't know. It kind of seems like there's mixed feelings about this whole, like, should we use reflection to resolve dependencies? Because, well, first of all, I've heard from a couple of internals people that reflection, you know, is an API that allows you to inspect your PHP code from PHP. It's a little bit like Inception, right? But the problem with it is that it's a little slow. And it wasn't really designed to be kind of used in the way that we've been using it. But, you know, we're PHP developers. If you give us an electric shock, every time we do something wrong, we start incorporating the electric shock and the extra energy we get every once in a while into our program, and then we depend on it. So when they stop shocking us, we're like, hey, this doesn't work anymore. I think there was a comic about that or something recently on Twitter. But we have this thing though, and lots of Laravel I know is probably one of the biggest frameworks who has a dependency injection container baked in that uses reflection out of the box. Now it's super convenient because you just type hint the thing that you want and magically gets pooped into your controller, which is really really exciting for those who don't want to have to sit there and deal with, as you said, XML files to configure everything, or using annotations, or with Pimple, like I go in there and I have to manually tie those things together. So it is kind of convenient, but it does have the drawbacks of that performance stuff. But if you're caching it and you're making it performance enhancements that way, is it okay there? Or what? I'm just curious what your thoughts are on this whole reflection versus other types.
Yeah, well, I had several ideas. The main thing is that I used to be a very dogmatic person on this topic. I've been writing on mainly about Symfony in that way that I always advocated removing any kind of dependency on the framework, including annotations and like really specific injections from framework parts. These days, I feel that for certain areas of the code base, it's perfectly fine to do anything that the framework allows you to do, but also to sort of embrace any kind of best practice they have or things that will make you fast. I mean, going fast is not really bad, a bad thing. You know, that's actually very great. But if I were to include some code, maybe from a library or maybe it's my own code from some other part of the code base, I wouldn't want to add annotations to it because that will maybe mix some concerns and also make it less reusable. So as long as a container has some alternative to that, maybe a configuration file or maybe some custom PHP code, that's perfectly fine.
The problem I see with reflection in the DI context is that we have to parse each and every single file in our project, and this does not also mean the source folder. This means like parsing every single class and every single interface and trait in our vendor folder. Now, as you might realize, you can have a lot of dependencies there, and I guess that slows down the whole process. So I'm not really a big fan of reflection in this case. It totally makes sense in the Java world, where when the Java process starts, you know all the classes that are available. But due to the nature of how PHP works, I don't think this makes sense for us. But yeah, I'm very biased on that one.
Yeah, I'm kind of a bit suspicious about auto-wiring containers too, for another reason. It's basically when you use an auto-wiring container that is doing reflection, you assume that all the dependencies you are injecting are actually singletons. If you inject a DB connection, it assumes that there is one DB connection. If you have two objects that is two different database connections, it's starting to be difficult to use. Same thing for loggers. It assumes that you have one logger, so you inject your logger interface, it's plugged to one. If you have more than one, you start to, you need to do some configuration, and this configuration is not always easy. So I'm not a huge fan of auto-wiring for this reason. That being said, it works remarkably well, especially in Laravel. And there are a lot of users that are a big fan of this feature. And it, indeed, it helps you be fast. I guess I need to listen to people who are really huge fans of it. It just happens that I don't really like it, but there are so many people that say, yeah, who am I to judge them?
Yeah, and it does seem like it does. There's a layer of magic there that happens that makes it kind of hard, especially if you're not used to having this magic done. That's like, oh, where are these dependencies being injected? But so here's the confession: I deal with a lot of legacy code bases, and when I do, I typically bring in like Pimple or like a little container that I can manage my dependencies with. And in the last time I integrated Nikita Popov's FastRoute, I found myself going to Reflection to like automatically resolve dependencies for me, because like I like it so much that I just, even in my legacy code, like my legacy code bases that I don't even have any fancy DI container on, I still want it. So I didn't even optimize this particular one. I was just like, I'm just going to use Reflection every single time it makes a request. I don't care, because it wasn't a big deal. Like, you can do that with some projects. I guess there's always a trade-off, right? You can always ask that question, like, what do you get with this? What are the trade-offs? And then you can make a decision based on the project, I guess. So, that's good stuff on dependency injection containers. We should probably move on to, because we're kind of getting closer to wrap-up time. We've talked about not being kind of different ways that we can inject stuff and the tools that we have, but we haven't touched on PSR 11, the official standards recommendation for how to deal with containers. The container interface is the official name for it, I suppose. And we have a particular panelist here who Yay! Has worked directly with it. Can you tell us a little bit, David, about what you've been doing with the PSR 11 and where its state is right now?
Oh, well...
And what it does.
Well, first of all, I've got an excellent tool. It has been accepted. Yay! So we've been working on it for the last 3 years, maybe, and it's been really an uphill battle. The PSR 11 is really only about one very, very, very simple thing. It's how you fetch objects from a container. So basically, there are two methods in it, get and have, to know if a service is there and to fetch it. And that's it. It's true that there were a lot of people were kind of reluctant to see it because they were afraid that we would use containers as a service locator. Like inject a container in your controller and then use the container doing container calling the get method of the container to fetch all the dependencies, and that is really naughty thing to do. You don't want to do this. So we have been spending a lot of time explaining that it's not for this use case, but there are a lot of other use cases that are pretty cool.
So you said this is kind of like opening us up to do more things in the future.
Well, you can already do a lot of things now. As a regular developer, probably not much. At the framework level, it's getting really more interesting. Right now, for instance, if you're developing a router and you want to route different URLs to a set of controllers, you could inject the container in the router and then have the router fetch a different controller for each route, and the router will have to use the container to fetch the correct controller for you. So it's a good way to make your router completely separated and independent of your container. So it helps us build a code that is more isolated. Your router does not have to depend on your your router does not have to depend on your container. In the past, both were very often linked together. So right now with PSR 11, you can do that.
Nice.
And in the future, there are a lot of things that we will be able to do with it. The next step is to define how we put things in a container. So far, GSR 11 is only about fetching things from a container. And if we want, for instance, to write factories or service providers, your factory that is going to build a service will need to fetch dependencies from the container. And so in your factory, you can inject a container to fetch the dependencies and build the new services. Where am I going with all this? The whole idea is that I would definitely like to be able to have modules that are framework independent. Today, if you use a Symfony, you're going to use a Symfony bundle. If you use Zen Framework, you are going to use a Zen Framework module. If you use Pimple or Silex, it's a service provider, a Laravel service provider, and so on and so on. And all those modules are doing mainly one thing, they put services in the container. And what would be really cool is to have one way to do this, because for framework authors, they wouldn't have to write like 10 or 20 different modules for each for one specific framework. They could write one global, let's call it a service provider, and put it in each container. And so we're currently working on that, and PSR 11 is the key to doing that. In different, there are really many different ways to look at the problem. One way is to say, okay, maybe we could put several containers together. So maybe your module is going to provide a new container, and the main container of your application is going to look into the container that your package provided and fetch services from it. So you need to fetch services, so you need PSR 11 for this. Or you could provide a set of factories, and to fetch dependencies, you still need PSR 11. So it's really the building block that we intend to build upon to have this generic bundle system in the future. But, well, that will be maybe in 3 or 4 years, if we ever get there.
So there's no official PSR for these things yet, right?
Not yet. I'm currently trying to form a working group. So you can go and have a look at the mailing list of the PHP fix. Currently we are discussing about who wants to come in and who wants to work with me and, to solve this problem.
True, true. So I've been watching Twitter notifications, and Matthew Napoli just liked the tweet that we're discussing dependency injection. So I hope he's tuning in, because we have a special treat for him a little bit later. But Wes Netmo from Twitter also chimed back in again, and he was asking a question for everybody. He says, how do you guys use functions with DI? And then gives an example of interface plus underscore underscore invoke. Wait for a type def kind of thing, and you avoid them for now. So what's the... this consensus on that, using functions with DI? Have you ever tried that?
Not really.
The only thing that comes to mind is when, at least in Symfony, you could have a controller with just the invoke method, and you could have the route matches on the controller. It doesn't have a particular method or action name. It just calls this controller. I don't know, but that's the only thing that comes to mind. Except for maybe that there is something that reminds me of calling functions using DI, which is the Laravel method argument injection. I think it's possible to say, I want to call this method, and please, framework, do resolve the dependencies for me. I'm not sure. But, well... speaking of which, I don't think that is a good idea, or at least a good example of dependency injection, because it's not preparing the service to be run any number of times for different arguments. It's just, having the arguments for one run.
True. That's a good question, Mr. Wes. We will, I think we should keep trying some different methods and see if we can get that to work. It's kind of like auto-loading for functions. Like that doesn't, that'd be a really cool feature to have, just to have, like, if you just want to pull in one function, like namespace a function and then pull it in with auto-loading, that'd be sweet. We should make that as a feature.
There is a sort of maybe a bit of a philosophical connection to functions as well with dependency injection, where an object with dependencies getting injected into it and then a method called is the same as what functional programming has. Is it's called a partial application. You prepare a function with some arguments to be run again with some other arguments. So it's more or less the same, but it, not exactly the same, of course. But maybe it reminds us a bit of this.
Well, it is officially kind of time to start wrapping things up, because this has been a really good topic to discuss. I'm just curious, does anybody know kind of why dependency injection has become so popular, specifically in the PHP community? Does anybody know the kind of the history of how that happened?
I think some of it may be to do with kind of a, more of a focus on testing and testability that's come about in the last few years. Without dependency injection, testability is pretty difficult if you're using any sort of composition of your classes and objects. So having that in place, I think, kind of pushes people towards more of a dependency injection style of writing the code.
Yeah, I'd also say that dependency injection appeared with the second major version of big frameworks like Zend and Symfony. The first version were kind of really monolith, and to build the second version and to break the monolith into parts, you had to have some way to put the parts together, and the glue is dependency injection. So I guess that's how it came to be. It's on the second iteration of the big framework that, hey, we need something. Let's look at the Java world. They have something cool, and I guess that's how it popped up. My take on it, I'm not exactly sure it's how it happens, but that's my understanding.
That's right, and I think maybe even I'm not sure which year it would have been, but I think at the early beginning it was Stefan who introduced me to the concept of dependency injection, in fact, in Amsterdam at that Dutch PHP conference.
2010,
that's great.
Yeah.
So 7 years ago, and I think it was back then pretty new. I think he mentioned Symfony back then, and I also remember some part about the problem where the dependency injection container itself is going to be a dependency at some point, and you will have to have dependency injection containers for dependency injection containers to inject the correct ones, something like that. But maybe this is where everything comes together with something like this PSR for container interfaces. We could all wrap them, compose several containers in one. That would be cool.
Yeah, I think the history of dependency injection in PHP goes really a long time way back. I think the first implementation I found was in 2005, 2006. It was an implementation that was called Garden, which was basically taking the Spring Framework DI container and like porting it to PHP. It was like more like an test project, so to speak. So it wasn't really tuned for production. And back then we took that as a basis and integrated that in our own internal company framework. And then I think this whole idea of dependency injection really took off 2009, 2010. Like I started doing a lot of conference speaking on that matter beginning of 2010, and 2009, 2010, all the version 2 frameworks came around or started to evolve, like Symfony 2 and Zend version 2, where they figured out that this monolithic frameworks don't make sense anymore, and they were figuring out we need to focus more on these components. And when you start thinking about that, dependency injection is like the natural fit, and then I guess it just evolved from that point.
You can still see some of the old dependency injection related code in several Zend components. A couple of years ago, at least, it was like that when I looked in some encryption code, and every dependency was both injectable or settable, but also by default constructed if it wasn't provided in some way. So that shows us how how we used to think back then.
Actually, and the Facebook PHP SDK kind of works like that. If you don't inject a dependency, it'll just new one up for you.
Nice. So not just back then.
Right. It still happens. Right. One last thing I do want to ask before, because I totally forgot to ask this question. So it's on the show notes, but I forgot to ask it. The injecting your dependency injector, a container, into your objects. I feel like that's kind of like the temptation when you first get into DI. You're like, okay, I got all my dependencies into this big container. Now let me just send this container on all my objects and they can pick what they want out of it. Is that a good practice or no?
in general, very much no.
So what's so bad about this? Like what does this end up causing?
It means instead of looking at your constructor or looking at your documentation to find out what sorts of things your objects rely on, you have to read all of the code, because it could be literally anywhere and it could be asking for literally anything. In fact, it could be dynamically looking for anything. So it may be dynamically constructing the thing that the name of the thing to ask the container for. So you literally can't figure out what the dependencies are unless you run the code with all of the possible inputs that could give you output, right? So I did say in general, I've found in very, very, very few cases, injecting a container, at least as far as I can find, is the only way that I've been able to make some things work. And that was with, where you've essentially got, user configured, object trees, right? So you need to build these things and they have dependencies, but the code doesn't know what they are. They're coming from external configuration or whatever. I don't know if I'm using the term properly, but I've heard the term functor is what that sort of pattern is. Essentially injecting, it's kind of injecting a factory. So I'm not necessarily injecting the entire container, but I'm injecting a factory that can then build the things that I don't know I need yet. It allows you to kind of at least limit the scope of what you are looking for in your dependencies, instead of saying, here is this massive, so-called God object that can build anything, and good luck figuring out what you need out of it.
There's an interesting thing that I've been encountering in my code. It's very much related to this. You don't know what you're going to need at the point where you're just parsing a request. At the very early stage, you have to do the routing, and what will be matched is the name of the controller, and then you have to fetch it from basically the service locator. So that's the entry point for the application, and I guess almost everything else should be just automatically wired and instantiated, because, well, once you know you're going to run this container, everything will be a dependency of that, or when you're going to run a controller, everything will be a dependency of that controller. Basically, that will be the top of the graph. The same goes for any console stuff that you have. You're looking up the name of the command. It will lead you to an actual service in the locator, and you can fetch it. I guess that will be most of the use cases covered.
Yeah, I strongly believe that there are only three locations where you are allowed to pull dependencies from the container. One is your application. Second is, as Matthias mentioned, the routing, where you connect a route to a action or a controller, and you need to pull the correct dependency of the container. And the third location is the view or the templates. But all that stuff is framework specific. So in your application code, you should never ever manually pull out a dependency, or at least try to avoid it as much as you can.
So I do want to kind of go with that thread a little bit, and because we talked about it in the last podcast when we were talking about logging and crash reporting, and we kept coming around this concept of like, how do you get your logger into your low-level code? And we were kind of like, well, maybe we should save this for the next episode. And it was like, we went this whole episode without even mentioning it, but like, is it okay to like have like this globally accessible function called log error that basically knows what the logger instances, like basically service location through function, and gives you like lets you write to whatever log setting you have set up, like whether it's to a flat file or to Redis or some third party service? Like, is that okay? And or is there certain contexts where that's good and certain contexts where that's bad? Sorry, I know we're trying to wrap up here, but I'm like, I gotta ask this one.
I say no, or it's actually it's a Laravel way of doing things. When you have a facade, that is actually accessing the service, and you can access it from everywhere. But if you want to do things cleanly, you really need to inject the logger in the object that you are that wants to log things, and it's not really difficult to do. I mean, you just need to inject the logger in the constructor, and you're done. So I'd really go that way rather than having a utility function that is fetching my one and only logger because you make the logger a singleton. If tomorrow you have two parts of your application and one you want to log in Redis and maybe another one is generating a lot and a lot and a lot of code and you want to log it in a file temporarily, if you have only one function, you cannot do it. So definitely just inject the logger and use it, and don't do that evil function that is doing low-level stuff. You don't need that.
Oh, hell, please no. So I'm also very biased on this one. I would never, ever inject a logger because I don't think a logger is a dependency of your business domain. A logger is part of your infrastructure. That way, I built a small, let's call it a registry or a factory to pull in the logger that I set globally in my bootstrapping code and pull the logger from there. I would never ever inject it in my services or repositories or whatnot, because I don't think it's a real dependency.
Are you saying in there that you are setting a logger in a registry and then you're fetching the logger from this global registry in the classes that need to use it?
Yeah, correct. Yeah, I know that doesn't sound good, but no. In this particular case, I think it's okay.
So in order to test those classes, you need to configure a registry and put in a null logger or false logger or something?
So this registry, when a logger is configured, it would return a null logger, so the code will actually work. So my code does not care about what the registry returns. It will always be a valid logger instance, either a null logger or the correct instance.
So there's a test mode and a normal mode?
I wouldn't call it specifically that, but yeah, you might could call it that way.
You are talking about the code in your application. If you were writing a package, you would not do that, do you?
We also do that in our packages as well, yes.
Interesting.
Cool. This is exactly why I asked this question, because I've done it both ways. I've injected it from high level all the way down to the bottom, and that didn't feel quite right. And then I've done it from just like a function, and it doesn't quite feel right either. But like the just accessing it from this global function feels the most convenient, certainly. And I am kind of back and forth on like whether it is an actual dependency or not, right? Because like you're depending on it because you want to log something, but at the same time, it doesn't really like if we're talking about domain code here, it doesn't like your domain doesn't necessarily require that the logger be there, right? That's more of just sort of like an implementation detail or debugging thing that I need to look at later as a developer, right? So I've been torn between this thing, and it looks like you guys are torn between it too, so I don't feel so bad being torn about it then. So
would your code break if it wasn't there, Sammy?
Would my code break if it wasn't there? Oh, you mean the logger?
Yeah.
I thought that was more of like an inception kind of question.
No,
it wouldn't. Oh, actually, I don't know if the logger wasn't like if the instance of the logger wasn't there.
Yeah, if you didn't have a thing building a fake logger or are you saying you do this function way or the registry way or injecting or all of those things?
The most recent way I've done it is just creating this global function that I just call like log error or something like that. Yeah, and it basically just pulls in. I have a singleton of the app, which is basically the container, and then it takes whatever default instance it wants to do, and pulls it in as the logger. And then typically the only logging that I end up doing in these particular instances are for like logging network HTTP responses. And so a lot of times when I'm doing the test, it doesn't even get to that part where it's getting like an actual HTTP request, so it doesn't even hit that logger part. So I guess that's kind of untested code, but like in I guess a practical sense in my particular instances, it doesn't really matter. So I don't know. That's a really good question though. I don't know what would happen if the instance wasn't able to instantiate, what would happen? It probably would break, I guess.
So if that's the case, it sounds like it is an actual dependency.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Unless you can do it like what Stefan says, do like a null logger.
Sure.
That seems to be like a good thing, especially for testing and other
Yeah, that's the problem, because you always have to remember to create an instance of the null logger as a default dependency when you mm-hmm. say, hey, your logger is an optional dependency. And that just pollutes your code base or your classes in this case. And that's what I don't like about this approach.
Right.
But yeah, that's not like, there isn't a perfect one either, I guess. So.
Right.
So if I was really trying to move this logging stuff out of a class, in the past I've successfully used aspect-oriented programming for this. To sort of intercept function calls, method calls, and then add some log line. In particular, if it's about debugging while developing, then that's a very useful thing. It also helps you not forgetting to remove all those debug statements again. That's one particular way.
So what was that again? Like subpub kind of thing, like firing off events and then have listeners. Is that what you're saying?
Well, that's one way, and I've seen this done also using really quite specific interfaces where you don't inject a logger, but you inject some sort of a notify interface with very specifically named methods saying this has happened, something has gone wrong, etc. Also, a regular event dispatcher might be interesting, but an event dispatcher hides what your intentions are. It's just sort of an anonymous message. But aspect-oriented programming wraps an existing object with some decoration. So you can call things before and after any of the object's methods have been called. This is used for logging and for caching. I don't know any other use case than that, but those are very useful applications.
That's awesome. I got to look into that because that just really sparked some ideas in my head just then. I gotta look
AOP,
into awesome.
And there's for PHP the Go AOP framework, which I've used. And I think in particular for Symfony, there's a bundle for it, which will hook into the dependency injection container configuration as well.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, we might have to have a PHP roundtable episode about that, you know, just to dig into it further.
That is very interesting.
Oh, I'm so... Yeah, totally. I'm totally sorry for going over time here. I know I don't want to take too much more of your time. So I do need to wrap up. So we've got this... what is it called? A repo. We have a repo at github.com/phproundtable, and it is where the show notes are. You see a repo called show-notes. And longtime show notes contributor, Mr. Chris Shaw, has contributed to show notes for episode 59, which is PHP 7.1, which I didn't get the audio version out until like last week. So sorry about the delay. I'm really kind of completely spending my time in lots of other areas, and editing these episodes is really takes a lot of time, so it's hard to get them out sometimes. So we'll get some audio versions of these episodes out soon. I do want to mention at least there's some fun things happening. PHP Tech is happening May 24th through 26th in Atlanta, Georgia. I'll be talking about step debugging and also about writing tests for PHP Source. And that's going to be really fun because I've been digging into some internal stuff that I would love to share with you. Also stick around for the USA Grand Nationals, which has nothing to do with programming, but everything to do with dance. It's the weekend right after PHP Tech. So just stick around and hang out with us in the dance community. It'll be a lot of fun. And I do want to mention at least I wanted to mention a couple of CFPs, call for papers. These are the opportunities to submit your talk ideas and get flown out to a conference and talk about whatever that you want to talk about. And I was going to mention a couple of them, but there's seven of them that are open right now that I know of on my radar. So I'm going to mention them really quickly. Northeast PHP, August 9th through 11th in Charlottetown, Prince Edward Island, Canada. The CFP closes April 15th, which is tomorrow. So got to get that their submission in there. Also, Laracon EU, which is August 29th through the 30th in the Netherlands, in Amsterdam. It closes, the CFP closes tomorrow as well. So get this, submitting those papers. Pacific Northwest PHP, fantastic conference. Went there last year, September 7th through the 9th. Seattle, that stands for Washington, I guess. The CFP closes. Thank you, David. It closes May 15th. Madison PHP, another great conference, is September 22nd to the 23rd. Unfortunately, I won't be able to go there. It's in Madison, Wisconsin. That CFP closes April 30th. And PHP Northwest is September 29th through October 1st in Manchester, UK. And that closes May 21st. ZenCon, another great conference I've been to, went last year, October 23rd through the 26th, Las Vegas, Nevada, closes April 14th, which is today. Oh, submit to ZenCon right now because it closes like in a couple hours. Yes, okay, get on it, submit it. And then the last one, Confu, Vancouver, is December 4th through the 6th. It's in Vancouver, Canada, and that one closes May 8th. I want to make sure to get all those out there so you can start submitting. The last thing we want to do is give a big shout-out to the developer who is awesome in our developer shout-out segment. And our sponsor for today is Zend Training, which is professional training for professional PHP developers, and you can find out more at zend.com/training. So thanks so much, Zend Training, for sponsoring the developer shout-out. They are providing a $50 Amazon gift card to recognize somebody who's really awesome in computers, who does stuff with code. This particular developer was nominated by the panel, and it is Matthew Napoli. So congrats, Matthew, for being nominated for the developer shout out. David, why do we choose Matthew to accept this developer shout out?
Well, Matthew is just an awesome developer. I've had the opportunity to work with him on PSR 11. He was the co-editor. He's very much he's doing a lot of work with the PHP fig. Right now, he's working on standardizing PSR 15. It's about HTTP middleware. He's been doing a lot of great work. He has been the author of PHP DI, one of the big DI containers out there, and really, really a lot of other amazing work. So big shout out to Matthew. It definitely deserves it.
Excellent. All right. Well, Matthew, I will be reaching out to you on Twitter to get your snail mail address, send you a little handwritten thank you note, and this $50 Amazon gift card from Zend Training. Thanks again, Zend Training, for sponsoring the developer shout out this episode. And finally, we're wrapping this thing up with some shameless plugs. Let's start off with Stefan. You got anything you want to shamelessly promote?
Definitely my DI container. It's called Disco. It's the DI container with the coolest name ever. just Google it. You will love it.
And it uses Reflection, right?
Not at all.
I'm just kidding. Nice.
But it has a logger.
Yeah. Awesome. All right, Matthias, do you have anything that you want to promote?
Well, I'm doing workshops all over Europe, so I'm happy to take a plane to anybody who is interested in doing those. They can be custom made. Take a look at training.matthiasnowbach.nl.
Excellent. What about you, David Stockton?
I do not.
Man of many words. And David, you got anything you want to promote?
Yeah, of course. Check out MOOF, the container I wrote. It has a graphical dependency injection, so you have a UI to pull your instances together. And also, if you want to join on the PHP Fig mailing list, we are looking for people to build universal service providers, so that we can put entries in any containers out there, and that would be really awesome. So if you want to join, just have a look at the PHP Fig mailing list. That would be cool.
Beautiful. All right. Well, this about wraps this episode up. Our next episode is not officially scheduled yet. I've got some ideas that I've been trying to toss around. I'd like to have another Room 11 episode, which was really fun to bring in the people from Stack Overflow, and another internals episode, because I've been nerding out a bunch of internal stuff recently. So it'd be good to get some people on here to discuss some more details about the insides of PHP, how the sausage is made. If you have an idea that you would like to see on the PHP Roundtable, a topic that you care about, send a request. There's like a little form on phproundtable.com that you can fill out, or hit me up on Twitter. I'm Sammy K, and you can just, or you can ping PHP Roundtable on Twitter, either way. So I'd like to thank David N, David S, Matthias, and Stefan for joining in this episode, and we'll see you folks in the next episode.
Bye.
Thank you very much.
Goodbye.
The PHP Roundtable is recorded live using Google Hangouts on Air. If you'd like to get more information about the live broadcasts, visit phproundtable.com. While you're on the site, join the mailing list to get notified about the next live episode. And hey, maybe even join the conversation at the roundtable. We'd love to hear what you have to say. The theme music is provided by BenSound at bensound.com. The PHP Roundtable logo was designed by Clint McManaman, and you can find him at mcmanaman.co. That's mcmanaman.co. Thanks for listening. I'm Sammy K. Powers, and I hope you'll join us for the next episode.